Hi, everybody. Welcome to another Real Estate Sessions Rewind episode as I continue my spring break. This break is nearly finished and we will soon be back.
I don't know if I ever asked for business. It just comes to us because our associates are very active in whatever they're doing in the community too. When people come to work for us, I say, you know, get involved in something you like doing, something that benefits the community.
You're listening to the Real Estate Sessions, and I'm your host, Bill Risser. With nearly 25 years in the real estate business, I love to interview industry leaders, up-and-comers, and really anyone with a story to tell. It's the stories that led my guest to a career in the real estate world that drives me into my ninth year and nearly 400 episodes of the podcast. And now, I hope you enjoy the next journey. Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 354 of the Real Estate Sessions podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for telling a friend, as I always say. And today we're going to have a lot of fun. I am talking to Ron Sheffield. Ron is the CEO and president of the Berkshire Hathaway Home Services EWM Realty Operation in Miami, we'll say South Florida. I met Ron with our CEO when Michael Davey was out here traveling through Florida, just kind of getting a sense of the Florida market for an Australian. It was unique to be able to experience that. Ron was kind enough to have lunch with us. And boy, I could tell just how during that conversation, he was somebody I had to talk to. It's somebody's story I had to get. So I'm really excited to get this thing started. Ron, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you, Bill. It's good to be here.
Yeah, you know, you and I met about a month ago or so, maybe a little longer, down in your neck of the woods, Coral Gables area. We had a really nice lunch with Nina Fabri from the Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Company, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Fun day with you guys.
It was really fun to talk to you and learn about really the unique space that the Miami real estate market is. And we're going to talk more about that. But first, I always start the podcast with where everything started for Ron. Now, I'm pretty sure, and most people probably could tell, that accent's probably not a South Florida native, right? So far, so good.
Yeah, I grew up in New York City.
let's go with where you grew up and how long before you made the move down here.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Tennessee and still the fifth largest city in the state, Jackson, Tennessee, which is near Memphis, but certainly not a huge place, 50,000 people. So you got to know a lot of your family, knew everybody in town sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I had a great growing up experience and high school experience. And then, you know, like a lot of guys and you know, kids from that area, we went over to Knoxville, which is 300 miles away to go to school at the University of Tennessee.
Yeah.
So I spent 4 years at the University of Tennessee and, you know, I had a, you know, wonderful experience there and, you know, met, of course, people that are still friends of mine today that I've known for, you know, decades now. So it's a lot of, you know, a lot of fond memories looking back on that. But after college, you know, you kind of want to not maybe go right back home. And so I moved to Florida and I thought I'd stay for a few years, probably end up back in the South someplace. And so here I am all these years later and, you know, met my wife down here and, you know, 3 kids and 5 grandkids later, I'm not going anywhere.
You know, Ron, I moved to Florida in 2017, knowing I was coming to the South. I was coming to SEC country, kinda. It's just north of us up in Gainesville. But man, it's a whole different world from growing up in San Diego and then moving to Phoenix where college sports are just whatever. Boy, if I hear another SEC person tell me, yeah, it just means more or it just matters more. There's a word, there's something that the SEC people love to say. But so you're a volunteer through and through, Rocky Top, the whole thing. I mean, it's Neyland Stadium, right? It's just unbelievable, right? What's going on up there. But I've got some buddies who went to Florida and they really don't like Tennessee. What happened there?
Well, you know, there's been a competition there for a long, long time, you know, and when I was in school, it was obviously, you know, very competitive at that point too. I think we probably were a little friendlier toward each other when I was in college, you know, 40 years ago, but I tell you one memory I have because we actually have a gator in my house, which is, that was a hard thing to accept in the beginning, but our oldest daughter is a Florida graduate. And she had a great experience in Florida. But I remember going, this is probably her senior year, junior or senior year. We're up there for a ball game when Tennessee was playing in the swamp And of course, you know, I was the only people, we were the only people there that had any orange on where we were sitting because our daughter had gotten us the tickets. And so we're like over in the middle of, I don't know, the alumni for Florida, I guess. And so our son at the time was probably, I don't know, he was maybe 15 or so, or even younger, he's probably 13. And he was all about Tennessee. So he had all of his Tennessee wear on, and it was a cool day. So fortunately we had to have some jackets on. So I said, well, you know what, until we see where we're sitting, let's just kind of like keep this jacket zipped up because these people can get kind of rough. And so we're winning the game. We ended up winning that game that day. And so as it became clear that even though we had our arms all covered up with a jacket, we weren't shouting with, you know, any enthusiasm when Florida did anything right. And so this older lady behind us screamed out. She didn't understand why these people, talking about us, were ashamed of their colors. And so I told my son then, I said, okay, now, after this next play, we're just going to quietly walk on down the aisle. We only had about 2 minutes left. And, of course, it was clear we were going to win. So, anyway, yes, there's a real competitive spirit between these two schools.
I love that. Well, look, 11-2 last year, I think, right? Yep. The Vols are back. I know they went through a little rough patch. So you got to be excited. Yep. It's looking forward. Very, I mean, excited. Your quarterback decided to go into the draft.
Yeah.
Yep. Right?
Yeah. We've got going to have some new players there, but you know what? The coach seems great. You know, I don't know him. I knew some of those previous coaches, but he's great, and everybody loves him up there.
I always wonder, was there someone in the real estate world as you were growing up that maybe kind of tilted you that way, or was it something that came from another source?
Well, you know, my dad was in a retail business, and he transferred, you know, every time he'd get promoted, we'd move to a new city. Mm. So, but most of them were in the South. So, you know, when I was really young, I mean, we lived in Texas, and then we lived in Kentucky, Louisiana. And anyway, I ended up in Tennessee. I say I'm from Tennessee, but I lived in some other places before that, but I moved there in middle school.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was certainly, you know, my early years. And so that's what I remember is really, you know, where I'm from, and you know, the people I keep up with from high school are all obviously from that area. But when I graduated, my older brother had just started his law practice in Florida. He went to the University of Miami Law School. And so when I would come down for spring break or just vacations during college, those 4 years, I mean, I'd stay with my brother and his wife. And I thought, well, this really is a nice place down here. And so he says, man, you ought to come down here and just live here. So I thought, well, what would I do? And so one of his clients was a real estate developer. So I started out in the development side of things.
Okay.
And it wasn't brand new to me because as we were moving around quite a bit when I was growing up, we were always living in new subdivisions where they were building new homes. And so as I got into high school, I actually started working some construction summer jobs and working with a contractor who built our house. And so I just kind of started, you know, gaining an appreciation for how homes are built. And so, you know, even as a, you know, 15, 16, 17-year-old kids, I mean, you start learning a lot about that. And I just, you know, was kind of attracted to that by the fact that we had moved a few times. And so yeah. I understood how all that worked. And then when I went to work with my brother's client and we were developing homes, and that was a lot of fun. And then one thing kind of led to the next, and we bought the company we have now. At that time, it was Esslinger Wooten Maxwell. Was founded by three women in the 60s, 64 to be exact. They opened our company in 1964. And then 20 years later, I had a partner by this time. And for, you know, he and I were partners for 30 years. And we bought the company from the three ladies in 1984. And then we sold the company in 2003 to Berkshire Hathaway. And that's when Warren Buffett was getting into our business. He'd gotten into our business in 1999. So 4 years later, we were the 13th company that they purchased. And now Berkshire Hathaway has purchased about 65 companies across the country, all, you know, about our size or larger or smaller. And we're kind of right in the middle of the size of all of our companies. But, you know, wonderful collection of companies that, you know, I had known many of these people for a lot of years, you know, just in the various industries that are various networks that we were a part of within the industry. that's how I got here. And so I've been at EWM now for 40 years, but now our name has changed, obviously, to Berkshire Hathaway EWM Realty. So
gotcha. You know, Ron, at lunch, you shared, you know, the EWM story. Those are the last name, initials of the last names of the three women who own that real estate company. Can you share that with us?
Sure. Well, the three ladies that started our company in 1964 were already in their late 50s and 60s when they started the company. So by the time we actually bought the company from them, you know, they were in their 70s and 80s. And so they were dynamos of their day. And, you know, for that time, you know, for three women to start a company that became, you know, a large company in Miami, you know, it was a real accomplishment that, you know, a lot of people shared their pride here in Miami. And we kind of met them kind of by a fluke. I mean, we were in a development business. You know, I had a partner for 30 years and we were developing condominiums, mostly some single family homes, but mostly condos on both coasts of Florida. But we were based here in Miami. And my partner had a relationship with the E, Anna Mae Esslinger. They'd gone to church together, and so he knew her through that. And so she had kind of confided in him one day that it just seemed like it was going to be time to sell, and they didn't really want to sell to anybody that had tried to approach them about buying, that she wanted us to buy their company. And so I said, well, gosh, you know, we're over here in this development business. I mean, I don't know if we've got time to do all this. And he says, well, I think we can do this. And so that's exactly how it happened. It was pretty much that simple.
Yeah.
And so we bought the company, and, you know, the market was in 1984, we bought it. And, you know, we just had, we had 50 people, 55 people to be exact. And that first year, we did about $50 million of sales, which was pretty good, I guess, in that time. They were averaging like $1 million a person, not quite. But we just started recruiting a lot of people. And then we started buying other companies that saw what we were doing. And then it just kind of kept growing. But the three ladies, we still talk about. You know, we have a painting of them in our offices just to kind of remind us of the help that they gave us and the inspiration they gave us when the company was started. But, you know,
yeah, one of them was business minded. One of them was a socialite. Am I being polite
yes.
there? Yeah. And then yeah. I can't remember what the third one was.
Well, she called herself the business manager. And they were cute. They were great friends. And you got a good memory there. Yeah, the one that was really the, you know, the person that was out in the community was Anna Mae Esslinger. And she was the life member of the Chamber of Commerce and, you know, the president of the Board of Realtors. And, you know, she played bridge every Wednesday at the country club. And, you know, she just sponsored a lot of events in town. And so she was very out involved in the community. The second one was Dodie Wooten, whose father was the second physician in Miami, actually built our still existing today county hospital. He and Dr. Jackson of Jackson Hospital, those two guys, you know, were early people to Miami. And so they needed a hospital and those two doctors built it. So, you know, they had a lot of affluent friends. And so Dodie Wooten sold probably the first $1 million home ever sold here because they were friends with everybody else that had businesses here. And, you know, there weren't a lot of people here in those years. You know, Dodie Wooten was born in 1911 and her family moved here in 1917. And even by 1920, I think there were only about 5,000 people living in Miami. And then Arlene Maxwell, she was a petite little lady who really managed the back end of the business. And she always used to laugh and say that she was the balance wheel between two big wheels.
But that's great.
Yeah, but they had a great relationship for a lot of years. So that's how that happened.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, you're much bigger than 55 agents. Now let's talk about what Berkshire Hathaway Home Services EWM looks like today.
Well, we have a little over 700 agents and 10 offices in Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. And we've always focused on the high-end markets. And so we still do that. And, you know, we're fortunate that we've been able to assist a lot of developers over the last several decades because of our development background originally. You know, that was easy for us to transition into that. So we have sold, you know, several thousand units of pre-construction, you know, all the way back to the, you know, the late 90s and early 2000s. And then The Berkshire, of course, now owns other companies in our Florida market. So we have four sister companies. I mean, well, three sister companies plus us, four of us in the state that are owned by Berkshire Hathaway. And it's just kind of, it really wasn't planned this way, but they're kind of like, you know, West Coast, North Florida, Panhandle, Jacksonville, and of course, along the western or the eastern border down here. So that has given us a lot of strength, not only within our state, but across the whole nation now. I mean, we have major companies in Southern California and in Dallas and Denver and, you know, Washington, D.C., New York. I mean, in the Midwest where Warren Buffett is, I mean, we own a lot of those companies up through there. So it's just been a great collection of people. We all like each other and learn from each other. And of course, it's been easy to share business with each other because when people are moving, you know, it's really one stop shop. You know, we have the same name and, you know, it's all Berkshire under the Berkshire umbrella. We also own a mortgage company, a national mortgage company called Prosperity Mortgage, and title companies for each one of us to close deals, insurance company to help insure all these properties. So it's been fun to see how all this has developed over the years, and we've all benefited from it, including our customers.
Yeah, you say development. You had a lot of those sales offices for those new towers going up, is what you're telling
us,
right?
Yeah, really fancy. Awesome. You know, I mean, we were fortunate to be, you know, of course, when technology was not what it is today, you know, we had a lot of, you know, fancy, you know, screens and help in the offices to showcase what we were dreaming about would be there one day. And of course, you know, then we would sit off to the sideline in a construction or in a sales trailer on the property in most of those cases, and we'd watch the building, you know, be built and then people move in. And anyway, those were fun periods and still fun periods. I mean, we met
with a developer yesterday.
Yeah. I mean, and now the developers are from all over the world. I mean, you know, we met last week with a developer from Dubai and, you know, from South America. I mean, these development companies all see, that, you know, these are well, you know, established companies from other places,
right,
that are now coming to the U.S. and to Florida in particular to build. So, yeah, we're helping them as well.
What? I'm going to ask you this question. I don't ask this very often, but I know you'll have an answer for this. What is a day in the life of the president and CEO of EWM look like? And after you tell me what it looks like, tell me what you wish it looked like.
Well, you know, I think everybody thinks, well, gee, you know, we sell a lot of beautiful, expensive homes. And so, you know, they probably figure that we're all out on our yacht someplace just enjoying the weather. But we just get our, we get our hands right down into the nitty gritty of what we're doing every day. So, you know, a lot of my time is spent with our associates. I still enjoy that. It helps me to stay really connected to the market. You know, our agents know the market better than anybody because they're talking with buyers this afternoon to tell me kind of what's their response. And, you know, as interest rates change and as, you know, headlines change, you know, our buyers' attitudes change and so do the sellers' attitudes. And so, you know, trying to stay abreast of all that, I think is a key to, you know, making sure that we give the right advice to our buyers and sellers. So I still spend a lot of time with our agents. But, you know, like this week, I just ended a 3-hour meeting with our managers. See, these are our office managers and our marketing managers and all the people who kind of help us behind the scenes. And so we meet once a month and talk about, you know, changes. And, you know, we've got changes in our contract. You know, Florida, our governor and our legislature is enacted some new rules about foreign buyers. And so, you know, making sure that we are advising people properly on that. We spend a lot of time just talking about the legal, you know, implications of what these changes can make, and making sure that our buyers and sellers are well versed on all of that. Marketing is another big piece of our business. You know, the way we market our homes today is, I mean, it's first class. I mean, you know, the old days, you took a picture and you put it in the MLS and it sold, you know. Well, today it's worldwide marketing, it's YouTube, it's social media, a lot of moving parts. And so I spend, you know, some portion of almost every day dealing with marketing, our public relations. We have a public relations firm. So, you know, we're talking to the media constantly about what's happening in our market. And we like to stay abreast of the numbers too, because the media comes to us with a lot of questions about what's selling and what's not, and what do you see the impact of rising interest rates, and you know, and COVID, and you know, my goodness, what we did to COVID was, you know, like whoever dreamed we'd be dealing with all that. But you know, we've gotten through all that as well. So you know, my day is very varied, which makes it fun. There are long days. I mean, you know, I never leave here before dark, which is, you know, I mean, sometimes, you know, like last night I had a reception with our community foundation, and those are always good too, because you're with friends and people that you've known for a long time. Plus, it's just, you know, all those gatherings are just a source of business. You know, I can honestly say I don't know if I ever asked for business. It just comes to us because our associates are very active in whatever they're doing in the community too. When people come to work for us, I say, you know, get involved in something you like doing, something that benefits the community, and a natural byproduct of that will be just meeting people. And so when somebody's worked with one of our people, a PTA committee, or a junior league committee, or the Chamber of Commerce, and they say, boy, you know, this person's really responsible. And then when they think, well, gee, I need to either, you know, I need a realtor to help me with my own properties, or more often than that, people are asking our friends, oh, well, who should I call to sell my house or to buy a house? And so we get a lot of referrals, you know, that bring us in contact with new people.
Ron, I would imagine that you're a leader by example when it comes to being a part of the community. Because, I mean, when you look at some of the things you do and what you've done, right? You're founder of the Beacon Council, which I think is like an economic development kind
yeah,
of.
Yeah, that's our county's economic development. It's a quasi-governmental private, you know, enterprise. Yeah. So,
yep. You past chair of the Chamber of Commerce yourself, right? You're Coral Gables Community Foundation, a board member of a bunch of other foundations. You've been agent of the year and man of the year multiple times. I mean, that really is impressive. And I always say that to people, to agents that ask that question, I just struggle. And it's like, get involved with your community. I mean, you just said it. It seems like such a simple thing to do.
Yeah. Well, it is. And you have to like it, you know, and it does take time, you know. Yeah. Fortunately, my wife is very supportive of all these things, as well as my kids. You know, I mean, our son works with us now. And but our other two daughters have a license. They're in other fields, but they'll refer customers to us from time to time. For anybody in a community, your neighborhood, or wherever you are, you know, it's just fun to meet new people. And of course, that's where you develop, you know, long-term friendships. And so you have fun, but at the same time, you're certainly having an opportunity to, you know, to be a success in business as well.
Right. I've heard you speak about reputation. It's a core value for you personally, right? And I'm sure for your company. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, you know, I think everybody's looking for those that they can trust. And I don't know. I mean, I guess the world's always, you know, had, you know, its challenges. But it seems like today, you know, whether it's, you know, it's governments or, you know, politicians or, you know, business leaders or whoever. I mean, you know, it seems harder and harder to find people that you really feel like you can trust. And I think that we all are seeking those types of friendships and relationships. So, you know, our company, you know, we have what we call our core strengths, and you know, those are trust and integrity and longevity and stability. And I think that when people are entrusting, for many people, the most valuable asset that they ever own is their home. And when they're entrusting that to us, they want to know that not only can they trust us, but that we're going to be around for a long time. And you know, the integrity that goes with you know, everything we just talked about is very important to people, and mostly important to us. I mean, we want to work with those kind of people as well. And, you know, we have found that like-minded people kind of gravitate toward each other. And so we've been fortunate that our founders had those same policies and same, you know, values. And it's just attracted the same like-minded people all these years.
Yeah. Let's talk about what you and your leadership team look for. Because you bring on new agents, right? I mean, there's a constant flow of agents coming in and out of a brokerage your size. So what are you and your leadership team, you know, looking for?
Well, we're looking for those same types of core values, you know, trust and integrity and stability and longevity. But we also are looking for people who have, you know, the desire to put in more than a 40-hour work week. I mean, I tell everybody, you know, this is not a 20-hour a week job. You know, you're just on call basically 24/7. But that's what's fun about it. You know, I mean, gosh, if I just told you all the places where I've run into somebody at a baseball game my son's playing in and sitting in the stands, and somebody says, you know what, I've been meaning to call you. Well, they've been meaning to call a realtor someplace, but the fact that they were reminded that, okay, I'm with him, and now this is the time to have that conversation. So we want people that are involved in the community, that want to be involved in more than just trying to earn a paycheck. I mean, our people are all on commission sales, and so they're motivated, you know, to sell, obviously, to earn a living. But at the same time, we give back to the community. Our company and our people support a lot of charitable causes, and we build a Habitat for Humanity home every year. And, you know, we have about 75 of our people out there, you know, swinging a hammer. I mean, these are men and women both, and I mean, some of them have never done that before, but, you know, the Habitat program is designed to work just with people like that. And so we always enjoy that. And our national franchise, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, supports an organization called Sunshine Kids. And Sunshine Kids is supporting kids with cancer and, you know, giving them, you know, trips and things just to add a little bit more sunshine to their lives. We just have a really good spirit of people here that want to help and share with others.
And that's what you're looking for. Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah. That's awesome. I want to talk about the Miami market. I mean, it's quite unique. We were chatting and you mentioned it's not very far till you get to the Everglades and there's no building going on there, right? So let's talk about that, though, the kind of the macro of the Miami market. But then, man, Coral Gables is amazing. You know, Michael and I had a chance to stay in Coral Gables for a few days. And it was spectacular. So let's talk about that. The big picture then Coral Gables.
Well, the big picture is that, you know, the whole world is coming here. I moved here in 1975. And when I came here, it was still pretty much a bit of a southern, sleepy southern town of the U.S. And, you know, the fact that we have had so many other nationalities move into southern Florida, you know, we tease about the fact that our greatest asset now is our closest proximity to the United States. And I think that, you know, that is something that, you know, at one point was a real challenge for Miami because we had all of this changing landscape. And now today, I would say that our diversity is one of our greatest assets, because when people come here, no matter where they're from, they feel at home when they get here because they hear their language here, they find their friends here, they find their religion here, they find their foods here, their culture here. And you have to want to experience that, which in, you know, 40, 50 years ago, not a lot of people were ready for that. Right. But today we see so many next generation and even, you know, my age generation wanting to experience that. They love to experience that because you just get to really experience the entire world from one place. And so that's been kind of how I think we have grown like we've grown. And now, because we've made some wise decisions, you know, from a governmental standpoint, we're one of 8 states that does not have a state income tax. And that's been a big draw for wealthy people. And we now have, you know, people that are finding that this is an easy place to work remotely from. So if you know, maybe your business is based in another major American city, but it's not on the beach and it's not in great weather and you don't have favorable taxes, but yeah, you can live here now because of technology, and a lot of people can live here and still work remotely from here. So that's been a big plus, and COVID really taught us all that. And COVID really, as we look back through history, will be a real, you know, pivot point for Miami, where people will recognize that, my gosh, this has been, you know, this whole change that happened after COVID was not just a flash in the pan. I mean, it's something now that has created a whole new way of working and living. Whereas we used to sell thousands, literally, of condominiums for vacation use, now more and more of our sales are permanent residents moving here. you know, the U.S. Census tells us that about 1,100 people a day are moving to Florida this year or last year. That was a 2% growth rate over the year before, which was the highest percentage growth rate in the nation. So, you know, Florida and Texas are the two, you know, fastest growing states. But I think that, you know, those kind of numbers just, they really validate everything that we're seeing. And, you know, it's been fun. You know, we've got some challenges with traffic and, you know, even our schools now, you know, everybody, you know, a lot of the people are coming, want to have private schools, and we just don't have enough seats for everybody today. But, you know, we're, a lot of our private schools are having some big additions. I mean, like huge additions to their schools right now because they have such demand for that. So, I think that that's the big picture. Now the, you talked about Coral Gables, which is really like an oasis. George Merrick was the founder of Coral Gables in the early 20s, and he just designed a city and thought of every detail. I mean, most of the way the city is run today is exactly the way George Merrick set it up to run when it was incorporated in 1926. Mm-hmm. So Coral Gables is 97 years old this year, soon to be 100 years old. And we've been fortunate that we've had great leadership all those decades that have maintained this model that he set forth back then. Coral Gables was, I don't know if it's the very first, but it was one of the very first planned unit developments in the nation.
Wow.
So every block of Coral Gables was well defined on what could be built there. I mean, some lots are designed to be 5,000 square foot lots, where other neighborhoods, maybe the lots are 10,000 minimum. Size of the homes, you know, even the square footage is dictated by zoning. And of course, you know, the uses for commercial, you know, he even had what they referred to as industrial areas. They were not smokestacks, but they were making furniture or plumbers or electricians and, you know, that type of business. And of course, a lot of that has been kind of pushed out because, you know, we've built over with, you know, Neiman Marcus and, you know, nice shopping malls and condo developments and, yeah, you know, a lot of those kind of businesses now. But I think that the fact that Coral Gables has maintained the quality of what was originally envisioned has really been responsible for this tremendous growth that we have. And part of that development plan was to have places for more modest homes as well as very expensive homes. So we literally have, you can still buy a condominium in Coral Gables for $300,000, but yet we have, you know, waterfront property that's $50 million. So it's been fun to see how all that interrelates. And we're close to the airport, which is a big asset. So, you know, downtown Coral Gables is only a couple of miles from Miami International Airport. So, you know, that's a big deal in anybody's city. But, you know, we last year had the distinction of the highest number of travelers through our airport, of any airport in the world, I think. I mean, certainly in the U.S., 50,000 or 50 million passengers passed through the Miami International Airport in 2022. You know, everything is kind of close-knit. And as you said, from the beach to the Everglades is only 18 miles of width. So we have to kind of pack everything in. Yeah. And now what we're seeing is much taller buildings. You know, our tallest building ever to be built there is under construction right now. The Waldorf Astoria condominium tower is 100 stories.
Wow.
And prior to that, we had, you know, an 80-story. But all the way back to 2001, that was the tallest building we had then, was the Four Seasons Hotel and mixed-use office and condos. That Four Seasons building was built in 2001 and two, I think, probably opened. It's 71 stories. But now pretty much all the major buildings downtown are, you know, 50 stories plus.
And that handles hurricanes. Well, that's another podcast.
Yeah.
That's something else.
A lot of new codes. Yeah. It's certainly more expensive to build some of that than it was 50 years ago.
Ron, I've gone over my time limit with you. I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Thank you so much. And I do have one last question to ask you. It's the same question I've asked every guest. And it's, what one piece of advice would you give a new agent just getting started?
Well, I would tell this to probably anybody in any industry is, you know, find a mentor or more than one mentor. you know, as I look back over my career, I just think of people that they didn't even know they were mentors to me. But, you know, I was watching them and saying, well, yeah, you know, this works. And look what this person's done. And also, you know, to align yourselves with people who have respect of others. You know, and there are a lot of people that are not serious about what they do. And so I just have always been fortunate to be in a setting where I was around a lot of people that just had great grounded values and, you know, moral values and business ethics. And I think that, you know, it's not hard to find those people. They're there, but sometimes, you know, you need to be more proactively aware that especially as a young person starting out, that the habits that you pick up in those early years will never leave you, whether they're good or bad.
That's right. Good call.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ron, this has been fantastic. I once again, thank you so much for your time. I'll share this. You know, we're recording this, you know, in June, and I'm actually going to come down and get to see your operation in person. I'm really excited about that next week. That'll be super fun.
Yep.
Yeah. And once again, continued success. I mean, look, it's, I feel like I'm talking to Mr. Coral Gables. It's awesome. So I want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you. It's fun to talk with you too, and be reminded of some of those things that I've done over my life. And of course, all of us have a story, and the good thing about it never gets old. I mean, there's always something fresh and new. And, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, I learn something every day. I don't always tell somebody I'm learning something every day, but you feel like you should know everything by the time you've had a long career. But there's always something fresh and new. And that's why I love working with all the people that we work with, because I'm learning from them now every day too.
Thanks a lot, Ron.
Okay, thank you. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to The Real Estate Sessions. Please head over to ratethispodcast.com/RE sessions to leave a review or a rating, and subscribe to The Real Estate Sessions podcast at your favorite podcast listening app.